Springfield.
Gary Thomas from the Wealth Technology Group is in the studio. It's good to see you.
Hey, good to see you back, Steve.
Hey,
welcome back.
What's going on?
Yeah, well, a lot of things.
What's going on
course.
In the world of money?
Well, I have a question because, you know, yesterday or early this week, it was Aretha Franklin's funeral, and we had done a story about how, you know, here's a woman with like an $80 million fortune and no will. There's nothing. So, for all those people that, you know, maybe may not have a will, when you die, what happens to something? Like, does it like the vultures start, you know, flying overhead and picking that all apart, or what happens?
Not a good situation. And you know, Aretha Franklin wasn't alone without having a will. In fact, there was a very famous Supreme Court justice, Justice Berger, who wrote his own will. It was 180 words, and it was for the justice of the Supreme Court. It wasn't a valid will. So when you don't have a valid will, bad things happen. And one of the things that happens is that the state gets to decide, number one, where your money goes. So in Massachusetts, let's say you have a spouse and you have elderly parents. Well, some of your assets would go to your spouse, and some would go to your, without a will, would go to your elderly parents. So it's not automatic that everything goes to your spouse. Now, property is held in different ways. So this is property that you have in your name alone. But I mean, for most couples, you might have, if you're married, you might have a house that you own jointly. And if you own something jointly with right of survivorship, then it automatically passes to your spouse without a will. But other things, you have to put a beneficiary on. For instance, a lot of times you might have an old insurance policy. Your ex-wife might be the beneficiary of that policy, and you may have remarried again.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, so sometimes people forget to change the beneficiary. Sometimes they can't. So things that have named beneficiaries pass to the beneficiary outside of the will. So let's say you have a life insurance policy, and let's say your daughter is the beneficiary of that policy, but you know, basically the will says that it goes to your spouse. Well, it goes to your daughter because a beneficiary designation overrides the will. But in the case of people that are wealthy, like Aretha Franklin, the unfortunate thing is not only are there very, very high probate expenses, and there's always disputes about, hey, who is going to take under the will, but there's a federal estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was a very charitable person. Unfortunately, her charity, the way she set things up, about 60% of her estate, which probably is going to be, you know, as you say, in the tens of millions of dollars, is going to go to the government. And it didn't have to be that way. You know,
right.
You could pick a charity, you could pick, and if she was to give it to a foundation or a charitable organization, it wouldn't have been taxed.
And you can split beneficiary benefits too, right?
Absolutely. You can, you know, so most people, and you know, the thing is that about a third of Americans don't have wills, and about two thirds of Americans have wills that are way out of date. Like, for instance, you know, you might have had a will where everything, you know, if your spouse didn't survive you, it goes to your children. But
if you don't like your children?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it happens. And you know, you don't have to. And the other thing is children can be in different situations. You could have a wealthy child and a child that's struggling. And most people don't realize you don't have to treat your kids equally to necessarily treat them fairly. And a will will help determine that. But without a will, basically what happens is that you may have a situation where you have a lot more money than you think you do. And so how could that be? Well, a will appoints, in Massachusetts, we call it a personal representative, or we used to call it an executor or an executrix. And what happens is, suppose, you know, there's a car accident. Well, you could have a wrongful death claim against the person that hit the person that passed away. Well, who's going to carry that claim forward without a will? You know, a stranger that happens to be standing around appointed by the court to be your administrator,
mm-hmm.
or a fight over relatives. And that, so you really also, it's very careful because A lot of times you might appoint somebody as your executor, a person to back up. And if they're your age and you're aging, you know, do you really want somebody who's, you know, your age or older to be handling your affairs? And it depends. As people age, you know, they may have picked their sister. But if their sister is 80, maybe she has other things to do than clear up your estate.
All right. So you see, I like how you send all these bullet points that we get to talk to you about, because I struggle for questions sometimes. But here, you put this stuff in there. The new tax law that was introduced, a concept called chained CPI. What the hell is that?
Yeah, it was something that was snuck in. What happens is the cost of living index or consumer price index is a basket of goods and services that the government put together to try to gauge how much stuff goes up in the course of a year. So, you know, so it has housing, it has energy, a lot of other things in it. Well, from time to time, when they didn't like how much inflation was, they would just change what was in the basket of goods and services. So if you don't like a number, we can change it. Why it's important for this number to stay low is because Social Security benefits are tied to that number. Your tax brackets are tied to that number. Other government benefits are. So the higher inflation is, basically, the more the government has to pay out and the less it takes in taxes. So they came up with this concept called chain CPI, which is this. Instead of changing what was in the basket, they just said, well, you'll change what's in the basket. So if the price of beef goes up, it won't affect you too much because you'll turn around and buy chicken. And so the net effect of that is that you don't get your raise on your Social Security benefits. And this September, people are going to be looking next month for that raise. They're going to find out how much it's going to be. But the whole thing is a fallacy, because for most people, especially elderly people, what's your biggest expense? It's health care. So if it's not necessarily, you know, you can make adjustments in how much you drive and things like that in terms of for energy. You can keep the thermostat down. But you can't say, well, you know, with a high cost of health care, well, gee, I need that operation, but I'll substitute something else for it. It just doesn't work that way. But it is a way to basically, it'll create higher taxes for people down the road because the tax rates will not stay as low as they've been. And in addition to that, it'll mean lower benefits for those people on a fixed income.
This is Gary Thomas from the Wealth Technology Group. You know, something's been happening, and I know that for many years you lived in Springfield,
mm-hmm.
and I know that we've also talked a lot about the housing market. One of the things that has happened, specifically in Springfield, housing prices have gone up with this speculation that with the jobs coming in from MGM or the rail car company, that all of a sudden Springfield has become an attractive place to buy a house, certainly get a lot more for the money than in some other communities. But where the housing market is overall, it just seems to be a seller's market even still. So what is going on with housing, and specifically with Springfield?
Springfield is, it really mirrors what's happening in a lot of cities, that the prices appear to be going up, but now that's pushing, when something comes on the market, it's being sold relatively quickly, but not enough things are going on the market, and then people are getting discouraged. I mean, we have a situation in Springfield. I had a client just this week who had him and his wife, they're buying their second home. They've made three offers, and, you know, they've seen a house. They'd turn around in the evening or the next day, they'd make an offer on it, and they'd find out that basically the house was sold. And it's discouraged a lot of people. The other thing that's going on is there's less new construction being built right now. There's less property going on the market, and it's actually scaring people away from the marketplace. But other things is, why aren't new homes being built? Well, part of it is we have tariffs. One of these little things that people don't notice, the price of lumber has gone up. Why? Because we get a lot of lumber from, guess where? Up north. Mm-hmm. And so it costs more, and it's pushing up the price of homes. Also, something that a lot of folks in the home industry use labor that are immigrants or new immigrants that come over. And basically, there's a discouragement factor right there. So there's not the labor force, nor is there the lumber is become more expensive. And it's sort of like a perfect storm with that, with the rest of the prices going up. Mm-hmm. And things being sold quickly, it's actually scaring people out of the market.
But you know, Gary, I think that there's also quite a lot of over-speculation too, because I mean, there are houses in Springfield, whether it's new construction or old construction, and you go on Zillow.com or Realtor.com, you'll see I'm right about this. There are houses in Springfield, bigger houses that are selling, or the asking price is high 300s. $400,000. You would never have seen that 10 years ago. You would never have seen that 3 years ago. Yep. It's just, I think people are inflating the value of their homes to sell because they think they can get it.
And they're hoping. But the thing, and the challenge, of course, that Springfield has, and I can say from living in it for 25 years, is may or may not like this, but the school systems in Springfield are substandard. I mean, basically, the teachers try very, very hard, but there were a lot of neighborhoods where where people would rather live in a different community because a lot of folks, they have a very low graduation rate. It's a tough situation in Springfield. And I mean, basically, when I say that, that doesn't mean you can't get a good education. It means it's a challenge in some neighborhoods.
Yeah, and talk about the cost of lumber. Go back to that CPI thing. We'll just make the house out of straw or twigs, like the three little
like the three little pigs.
But, yeah. But you make a point that when you're building a house, when you're seeing a house, it's like going to the dentist or going to the financial advisor. You really don't know what you're getting until something goes wrong.
Right.
And that's really the challenge.
We've also talked about this before. Sunday, I'm moving my oldest daughter into college for the very first time. So it's a big day in the Baxendale family. But I'm 2 years away from now having two kids in college.
Ouch.
At the same time.
Ouch.
I know that when you're looking at like financial aid awards or whatever, that they do take that into account. How many kids are in college at the same time? But realistically, how much should a parent be saving in order to make that happen?
It is a challenge that is, and you're in a, you get into actually in a catch 22, because the financial aid formula is based upon two things: how much in your that you have available outside of your retirement accounts, and your income. So sometimes it becomes almost a catch 22. That doesn't mean you shouldn't save, but I think we've had folks with very, very strong incomes. And the greater your income, because college isn't deductible, the more difficult, it's like, I mean, your average school today, if it's a private institution, is about $50,000. That's your average. Now, I mean, your Ivy League schools are up to the high 60s.
Or more,
And so, how do you, when you're looking at a college education that is $250,000 today, and it's been going up at price twice the rate of inflation? So if inflation is 3%, the cost of college has been going up at about 6%, which means it can double about every 12 years. Now, the challenges that colleges are now having is that we're heading into a situation where there's less of a college population for the next 6 or 7 years. Because basically, the way the demographics work,
and so, a lot of families are opting to send their kid to the community college, or there's online options now. So there's more competition for them.
A lot of challenges, and then people are beginning to wake up that maybe you should be going to a technical school, or you should come out with a different set of skills than being a social studies teacher, which is, it's a great profession, but how many jobs are there going to be out there for particular professions? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those are the challenges and I think to your point, Bax, and you make a very good one, that there are more options now for people to be educated than there have been in the past. So maybe that will help push down the cost of the education. But as colleges and universities have built this big infrastructure, buildings all over the campuses are beautiful. Well, all of those buildings, by and large, unless you're from an Ivy League school with a huge endowment, they all have mortgages on them that need to be paid.
We should all have endowments that big.
We should.
We all should.
You don't?
No. Frankly, we don't.
I have a huge
we all heard you were very well endowed, yeah. But that's what John said.
Yeah. You can go to Gary's website, wealthtechnology.com, or call him 1-800-266-6793. Gary, it's good to see you.
It's our pleasure. Talk to you guys soon.
It's 725 at Bax and O'Brien, Rock 102.